This is a Republic if you can keep it. An inside look at Michigan and national politics with Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
I'm Mark Brewer. Welcome to The Lying Costs $787 million and Tucker Carlson his job edition of A Republic if you can keep it. The Biden campaign is officially underway this week with Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the only governor among the campaign's seven co-chairs. Is that a sign of things to come in the future?
I'm Jeff Timmer. Reports of a special grand jury on election machine tampering add to state Republicans' unenviable and astounding list of criminal investigations, even as one scandal brings a guilty plea from a former Republican House Speaker whose cooperation may still bring more indictments. Mark, let's talk with the big news of the week, President Biden announcing his reelection quite early by historic standards. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the president is going to remain above the fray, first of all. I mean, he made this announcement, which had tamped down any of the continuing, I think, irresponsible speculation about whether he's going to run, whether he should run. He's now officially a candidate, and that should settle things down. They're still going to get some, you know, wild candidates like Robert Kennedy Jr., the anti-vaxxer. I mean, you can't stop that. But I think this settles things inside the party. He's the candidate. All the major party officials and elected folks have said they're with him. Bernie Sanders came right out and said, I support him. There's too much at stake in the election next year. Do anything to undermine Biden, who's got the track record of beating Trump. But I think there were some other important things here, Jeff, even though it was kind of a low-key announcement with the video. As we mentioned, the governor is one of seven co-chairs, the only governor, a Midwesterner, female. I think that's a good sign for her. You know, it's further recognition of her significant role in the victory she won last year. But I also think it puts the pressure on her. All right, now you got to deliver Michigan next year, right? We're looking to you to lead the way in Michigan and make sure that it's delivered for Biden, and can't get a reelected president on the Democratic side without carrying Michigan. We've seen evidence of that time and again the last several election cycles. But all in all, a good thing for the governor. But I also thought the announcement video, Jeff, was very significant. You know, Biden has talked a lot about it, justifiably so, about, you know, the significant achievements legislatively, thanks, you know, principally the leadership of former Speaker Pelosi, done with a very thin Democratic margin. Billions and billions of dollars in infrastructure and clean energy investment, which is, you know, just now starting to pay dividends. We're seeing a lot of that money here in Michigan in terms of, you know, the electric battery factories and the road constructions over there. A lot of that is Michigan money, but there's federal money too. And he's going to continue to talk about that. He's running around the country holding events. But that video, come back to that, notice the focus, Jeff. It was on, we've got to stop MAGA. This election is about protecting democracy. The job's not over. We protected democracy in 2020 with this election, but clearly this is aimed at Trump, aimed at the MAGA-controlled Republican Party, and telling folks that, you know, unlike a normal presidential election where the issue would be the economy, you know, job creation and all these investments, which Biden has a good record on, no, this is still about protecting democracy from authoritarianism in this country. We cannot let Trump be back in there. So I thought that was very telling that Biden is continuing that theme. He's given a couple major speeches on it. And clearly, again, the 2020 election was about that. But that's going to be an important theme. And I think he's right to make that one of the centerpieces of his campaign. But what do you think, Jeff?
Well, I agree completely with you there. And I think that this is great recognition, putting democracy and the rule of law and country above party as the central launch piece of his campaign is a recognition of the existential crisis that's going on, not just in our politics, but in our culture. And we are standing on a precipice staring into the abyss. This is a sign that he recognizes that. And, you know, listeners to this show over the last 2 years have heard me lament many times how so many people on the Democratic side or the, what I would call the sane old guard Republicans, the John Kasichs of the world, et cetera, still don't seem to get the threat, the enormity of the threat that stands before us. This is not an election that has anything whatsoever to do with policy or legislative accomplishments. or the economy or anything else. This is about whether or not on January 20th, 2025, we have a functioning democracy that accepts free and fair elections, with the losing side accepting the winning side's legitimacy. That's what's at stake here, that we've been in this turmoil, this conundrum since January 20th, 2021, because the Republicans, as a political party to a person, have decided that they're not going to accept the legitimacy of Joe Biden. Even those who say, well, he's in the White House, but I have many concerns about the 2020 election. All of it has been corrosive, toxic, deadly to American democracy, which the old line, the democracy, the strength of a democracy doesn't have anything to do with how the size of the majority, but the minority's willingness to accept the outcome. And this is a great example of that. And I really am glad to see President Biden lead with the biggest trophy in his coalition, people coming together to support democracy, free and fair elections, and the rule of law. That's what produced his almost 8 million vote victory, his sizable electoral college victory, and that's what's going to lead to the defeat of Donald Trump again in 2024.
No, I think you're right, Jim. I mean, here we are 2.5 years after the election, and Trump has not conceded that he lost, and he's never going to concede. I mean, that's pretty clear how we're going to go through this entire first term of a Biden presidency, and Trump is never going to concede that he lost, nor any of his followers do the same thing. But I think the president was also very prescient in terms of this issue, as you've predicted. And, you know, we still have a long way to go and things could change. But, you know, every sign points to Trump being the nominee. The polling, his polling numbers continue to rise. DeSantis continues to flounder. I mean, there are stories every week about donors unhappy with him. There's a lot of backlash in Florida to his attacks on Mickey Mouse, among other things. And he just has not taken off. And I think a sign of that is that other candidates are now getting in, right? Nikki Haley announced that she was going to get in, and there's other candidates looking at it. And that reflects DeSantis' inability to solidify his standing as the alternative to Trump, you know, wherever he fits on the Trump spectrum. You know, he's certainly not the anti-Trump. You know, is he Trump light or Trump worse? Who knows? But he's been unable to nail that spot down. And so these other candidates are going to come in. And that, to me, just helps Trump, right? In a multi-candidate race, just like we saw in 2016, that just aids him, you know, in addition to his standing as the former president, whose people are in charge of many of the political parties, state political parties around the state, like Michigan, where these delegate decisions are going to be made. So I think the president, I think, put down a marker, and he's correctly anticipating, you know, what's going to happen on the Republican side of the aisle. I'll just add this. I thought it was really helpful and really good that the president also talked about values, because I think abortion and the values that those choices reflect are also going to be an issue here. We continue to see turmoil on the Republican side of the aisle among the presidential candidates. Nikki Haley was out there trying to stake out, a different position, but hedging on abortion. That's going to continue to cause turmoil inside the Republican Party at the presidential level as well as down ballot. And so I think we could see another election, not only at the presidential level, but further down the ballot, about abortion and choice again. But Jeff,
I would add to that, Mark, that the values, you're right, abortion. I would also add to that guns and accepting of equality, marriage rights, LGBTQ rights, trans rights, all of these things aren't policy issues the way the Republicans are trying to portray them. They are those are value issues that get at the core of what is right and what is wrong, and they fit nicely into Biden's message of democracy, the rule of law, and just standing for those things that are right as Americans. Those inclusion, equality, liberty. That those are some big issues, hot button issues that really fit that narrative quite well.
Yeah, and he's defending, actually, the moderate status quo. I mean, the country accepts same-sex marriage. The country by and large accepts the right to choose. The country, by and large, rejects attacks on trans individuals and so forth. But again, we see the Republicans, not only in Michigan, but nationally, using those attacks to mobilize their base, but not anything beyond that. Well, hey, I want to talk about the rule of law from another perspective. We see continuing fallout this week from the Fox settlement. You know, we already know there's a lawsuit by their shareholders upset over the loss of nearly $1 billion. And of course, there are other lawsuits pending as well. But Tucker Carlson got removed completely, severed from the organization, the star of the Fox News network. What do you make of all that, Jeff?
Well, it seems like a history repeating itself at Fox. If you remember, Tucker Carlson got that coveted position and became the top star when their previous top star, the top-rated Bill O'Reilly, imploded and was fired from Fox at the height of the Me Too movement when all of his indiscretions and illegal sexual harassment payouts were exposed, and he was forced to leave because, again, he was costing Fox a lot of money. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens with the Tucker and Fox, because all the disclosures that came as a result of the Dominion trial really underscore the fact this wasn't Tucker being rogue, saying the things, election denial, all the lies that he was continually repeating, the hate that he was stoking every night, the white nationalist commentary, the anti-gay, LGBT, trans commentary, all the things that Tucker Carlson was out there stoking. It wasn't happening without the complete acquiescence of the bigwigs at Fox. I mean, they can't say, well, we didn't know what was going on. He just broadcast, you know, from his basement studio and we didn't pay any attention to it. So it's going to be interesting to watch, you know, the potential litigation that comes out of this. But, you know, anybody who thinks that Tucker can take his platform and just move it somewhere else needs to look at, you know, Megyn Kelly or Bill O'Reilly. And, you know, before you Google them, they used to be Fox stars and they were considered, you know, too big to fail. But when they were deplatformed, they kind of faded into the woodwork. And now, you know, Charlie Kirk gets more clicks and watches and Ben Shapiro gets more views than any of them. So can Tucker Carlson maintain a platform? Sure. Will it be the same platform he had on Fox? No, it won't. And so that's going to be interesting to watch. But it is really telling about the influence and power that somebody like Tucker Carlson has, not in the news media, but in politics. Tucker Carlson and what he talked about became what the Republican Party decided who was going to win primaries for Senate and governor and races like that. It was an extraordinary display of the unholy union between the right-wing ecosphere and Republican politics. What Tucker Carlson might think it was him, it's going to be whoever gets that slot. And it will continue to be Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham. So whether they move, you know, Jesse Waters or whoever into that slot, they'll just continue to, in all likelihood, deliver the same kind of vile, disgusting, white nationalist, America First programming that Tucker Carlson was, because it got the eyeballs that they were looking for, made them the top rated cable news station or show on cable news. Somebody else will slide into that.
Yeah. So you don't think that Fox is really going to change in terms of the messaging and the appeal to that audience? That, like you said, these hosts are almost fungible. Because it's really the message, right? And we learned all that from all the material that came out in the course of trial preparation. It was really the message that was being conveyed, even though people like Tucker Carlson were skeptical, if not right, disagreeing with a lot of that message. They were still willing to be the messenger of that message. But I got to think, Jeff, that the Fox audience is saying, whatever happened to Tucker Carlson? This is like in the old Kremlin, right? How people just used to like disappear from the lineup on May Day parade, right? Or all of a sudden they disappear from the news coverage. All of a sudden Tucker Carlson is gone and there's been no explanation provided to those viewers. But I guess as long as you continue to feed them, you know, the lies and the distortions and the propaganda they're used to getting for the last couple of decades, they don't care who the messenger is.
Exactly. they're hooked up and you know, to like an IV that's mainlining the hate. And as long as the fix comes into their arm, they're going to be satisfied regardless of who's delivering the hate. And so I can't imagine there's going to be any change. Their Fox has done nothing to signal any course correction here. This is, I think, more to do with liability in the still pending lawsuit, Smartmatic and all the other lawsuits, and some word of some new discovery of some new messages, text messages, voice recordings that former Fox employees have of Carlson that came to light or will come to light in some of these other trials. And this was purely a business decision, and they felt they needed to throw somebody high profile over the side in order to satisfy investors and stabilize their market share and market price. And, you know, there was a temporary hiccup in their stock, but it's already course correcting. And I would imagine, you know, as soon as they slide host to be named later into this chair in those 2.5 or 3 million viewers return every night, no one will remember Tucker Carlson in a few years, unless or until he moves into politics, which there have been many rumors that, you know, could he launch a bid for the White House? And I would say, I wouldn't say that he's an actual real threat to topple Donald Trump, but Tucker Carlson's entry into the race would be more of a threat than anybody, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, whoever the hell, none of those normal, regular politicians stand a chance to enter the ring against Donald Trump. But Tucker Carlson would represent something much like Donald Trump, a made-for-TV reality star that has no real credentials other than viewers on TV and knows how to fight in that arena in a way that Donald Trump does. And so that would make it interesting in that regard to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a mixed reception of those folks in the public fight. Obviously, Carrie Lake was of that mold, right? She came out, she was a reporter, TV reporter, came very close, unfortunately, to be elected governor of Arizona last year. So we've seen people of that model, these demagogues that attempt to take their media persona and run for office. But what about, I mean, other than president, I don't know where Tucker Carlson lives, but he could run for Senate, he could run for governor, and use that as a platform as well. So yeah, we may not have seen the end of him from a political perspective as well. And so, Jeff, it looks like we're concluding that Roger Ailes, and probably none of our listeners even remember that name, his invention of Fox News and what it was intended to do, rolls on. The machine continues its mission of providing this massive amount of disinformation, misinformation, and feeding this part of the American electorate. Sad to say, but Ailes, at least in that regard, had it right when he put Fox News together and on this path a couple decades ago.
Jeff and Mark update the latest criminal problems for state Republicans. After these messages on A Republic, if you can keep it.
One thing I have learned in politics, not all pollsters are equal. There are a lot of bad polls and a small number of good ones. That's why Epic MRA stands out. Epic MRA has been measuring Michigan public opinion for more than four decades. The company has earned a national reputation for integrity and accuracy. In fact, it is rated as the best polling company in Michigan by 538.com. The 2022 election is the latest example of why political professionals rely on Epic MRA. While a lot of other pollsters were calling the key races toss-ups, Epic MRA accurately reported that it looked like a Democratic sweep. And they also reported that the three ballot proposals would all win decisively, which is exactly what happened. It's not just politics. Epic MRA has been the go-to pollster for school districts, local governments, and independent groups who need to know what the public is thinking. If anyone asks me, I'm happy to recommend Epic MRA. For the best in public opinion research, head to epicmra.com.
I'm Lavora Barnes, chair of the Michigan Democratic Party and host of the MDP's new podcast, Party on the Peninsulas. Each week, we update our listeners on the people and policies that are moving Michigan forward. For the first time in 40 years, Michigan Democrats are able to enact an agenda that benefits the working people of our state instead of the privileged. Our Democratic leaders are doing it at a record-setting pace. we will bring you insights directly from these leaders along with the top news of the preceding week. Stay in the know. Join us every Monday morning for Party on the Peninsulas. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on our website, partyonthepeninsulas.com. Make Party on the Peninsulas a regular part of your week. Sign up for your free subscription. Do it today.
Well, we were sitting here talking about the Fox court case and some of the fallout. We continue to have legal fallout, turning our attention here back to Michigan, where this week, issue that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, with former Republican Speaker Rick Johnson formally pled guilty in federal court to accepting bribes in his role as chair of the Medical Marijuana Commission back at the end of Rick Snyder's term as governor and the beginning of Gretchen Whitmer's term. There's still, he's part of his plea agreement is that he and the other, they're not even defendants anymore. Those convicted along with him will be cooperating with an ongoing investigation, still targeting other individuals. You know, this is just a sad reminder of the enormity of corruption that manifested itself in Republican leadership and Republican politics in Michigan. Two former speaker, you know, there's another former speaker under criminal sexual assault investigation, financial allegation, misuse of public funds and campaign funds. There are so many other cases, Matt DiPerno and the fake electors and Ryan Kelly. I know I'm forgetting, you know, there. I should keep a scoreboard because there's so many Republicans, so many crimes. I'm not being hyperbolic when I say it. There are so many. There's two dozen, three dozen high-profile Republican elected officials or party officials who are part of criminal investigations, and it's just as astounding. But your thoughts on the guilty plea finally happening, the, you know, what could come next, the scope of the Republican criminality, and what does accountability look like?
The plea deals that are coming down, and U.S. Attorney for the Western District, Mark Tott, indicated the investigation continues. And we know from press reports that there could be other licensees, lobbyists, and others involved in this scandal. You know, and Johnson is the second plea there. We had a licensee who bribed Johnson, previously pled. But I got to tell you, Jeff, though, one of the critical things about this is just how stupid criminals are. I mean, the trail that they left was not easy or not hard to uncover, right? Once people were onto it, just open bribery. It was pretty clear what was going on there. So we'll see how that all plays out there. There's a lot more to come there. You know, in terms of your list and the things that are going on there, we learned something new this week about the investigation into the tampering with election machines that DiPerno and others were involved in. Our listeners will recall there was a concerted effort after the 2020 election by DiPerno and others to go to local clerks, get access to their voting machines in order to examine the software, all of which is illegal. Even attempting to get access is illegal. Certainly getting access is illegal, but unfortunately, apparently, at least a few clerks allowed it to happen. That led to a criminal investigation. But because DiPerno was running for Attorney General Nessel properly recused herself and sent it to the Muskegon County prosecutor. There was a lot of attention being paid to this last fall, and Prosecutor Hilson appropriately said, look, this is under investigation. We're not going to comment because he clearly ethically didn't want to influence the election, but it's kind of faded from view. So now to bring our listeners up to date, this week the revelation was that Hilson has impaneled a grand jury to do the investigation. I think this is a very smart move by that prosecutor to, you can compel witnesses to come before the grand jury, provide documents, provide evidence, testimony, and build a case against these various folks, and then lay out indictments against them. So that was interesting news this week. Again, it's been very quiet on that front, but now we have this revelation of a grand jury. And again, it could take some more time. It appears that the prosecutor is being very careful in terms of doing this so it doesn't appear partisan or partisan in any way, because he's got some very high-profile targets here, starting with Matt DiPerno, who, like his model, Donald Trump, has been pretty slick in terms of not getting caught. I mean, you may recall he raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for this election defense fund. There have been lots of questions asked about whatever happened to that. No answers provided, et cetera, et cetera. But maybe this grand jury will finally catch up to Matt DiPerno. But there's other ones out there, too. People should not forget that former Speaker Shirky is under criminal investigation.
Yes.
Yeah, Senate Majority Leader, sorry, not Speaker, Senate Majority Leader. They're all fungible to me, Jeff. You know, it really isn't.
After term limits, I agree.
Yeah, well, it's under criminal investigation in connection with funneling money through C4s to ballot questions, you know, ballot question committees without reporting. You adverted to the Chatfield investigation, which has been pretty quiet lately. But again, that's a massive investigation in terms of the various areas of wrongdoing that we could come up with there. And, you know, former Senate Majority Leader Meekoff's name has come up in connection with some things. He's apparently got this C4, which he, when he left office, had hundreds of thousands of dollars. And if anything, seems to have gotten fatter since he left office, and is making payments to people or organizations which are undisclosed. And so there's a lot of legitimate questions that can be asked about what is Meekoff doing with this C4? Who's getting these payments and why? And he refuses to be transparent about it, which, you know, makes it look kind of shady and questionable, at least when you engage in that kind of conduct. So these things continue to grind on. And I think they're going to be continuing to, you know, kind of like an overhang about the Republican Party, as if the Republican Party, or what's left of it under Christina Caramo, doesn't have enough problems. This is just going to further harm the image of the Republican Party in this state. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Sorry to quote that old saying.
It's true. Well, and all of this is taking place as we record this. Donald Trump, there's a civil trial in New York going on, the E. Jean Carroll rape trial, the civil trial, you know, her claim, it seems, you know, very substantiated. And we'll see what the jury finds. Is she owed damages? Do they think that Donald Trump raped her? You know, that is hanging out there. And then we also had news this week that in Georgia, the Fulton County prosecuting attorney has made law enforcement aware that sometime between July and Labor Day, that they need to expect, you know, high profile indictment and charges in the election tampering interference case there involving Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows and Lindsey Graham, but more importantly and more high profile, former President Donald Trump. And so the legal troubles are the one consistent thing that binds Republicans together from the national and state level here in Michigan and Lansing and in Washington and in states around the country like Georgia.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, I like to get out and talk to Democratic activists particularly, but anybody who invites me, pretty much I'll go see them. And I always get a collective gasp when the question is asked, well, surely somebody can't run for president if they're convicted of some major crime or they're sitting in jail. And I tell them they can. The only requirements are in the Constitution of age and citizenship and residency. And Trump had known this and has bragged about it. He said, I'm going to run for president even if I'm sitting in prison. Now, obviously, if you get elected, serving is a problem. But, you know, there is no ban on felons, even those felons who are sitting in jail, from running for president. And unfortunately, as we've seen, Trump is very skillful at turning himself into a martyr and all these things, that people ignore the facts, these terrible allegations that are being now aired in New York, as you indicated. He manages to turn himself into a martyr, and his supporters believe him. You know, just like, you know, to blink at reality, deny reality again and again and again, and just use it. And he just uses it to raise more money and turn himself into a martyr. I don't know how we get out of this vicious circle, even if we start to get convictions in the criminal case that's been brought against him, or in the civil case that you referred to, or in the Georgia case. I don't know when it's going to be enough, Jeff, to persuade folks that they have been, you know, led down a real terrible path here.
Yeah, I don't think that I don't hold much hope that there's going to be some, you know, like you see in a movie where people wake up from their fugue dream state where, you know, they've been under a spell and they kind of come to. It's not going to work that way. There's going to be a slow, steady realization once Trump loses again in 24, and the Republican Party is sucked further into political oblivion as a result of his loss up and down the ballot. That's what it's going to take. The pain is the only teacher that's going to affect the Republicans, and it's going to have to be sustained long-term pain before they learn any lessons whatsoever.
So, Jeff, we have a new phenomenon emerging in our hate-filled politics, and it's a sad commentary that, you know, we had two Democrats in the Tennessee legislature literally ousted from the legislature, not just censored, not just had committee assignments taken away. There was lots of traditional punishments that you can think of that could be used, but they were thrown out of the Tennessee legislature. And now this week, a report out of Montana that a transgender member of that body has been banned from the floor. They're still going to be permitted to vote, but they've been banned from the floor. What's up with these draconian punishments that deprive their constituents of their right to representation and are clearly intended to, you know, stifle and gag these members? This is a very worrisome trend. I mean, we saw stuff like this, frankly, before the Civil War. And, you know, no respect for the right of those members' constituents to have the representation. Look, if people want to exercise the right to free speech and speak out and so forth, there are lesser means, you know, to punish them for their civil disobedience other than kicking them out of the body. That seems like a gross overreaction, but unfortunately a reflection of the times that we are in. Your thoughts, Jeff?
I think it represents the lurch toward heavy-handed authoritarianism that has manifested itself in the Republican Party. It's not, they view people who disagree with their position as not worthy, that they, if they hold the power, they can silence political opponents. And that should be worrisome to everybody. We saw it in Michigan in last year in 2022 when Lana Tice, the Republican senator from Brighton, made vile accusations against Mallory McMorrow over, called her a groomer for standing up for equality and LGBTQ rights. And what the Republicans, I mean, I hate to see this happening, but at the same time, I also love to see how the Democrats have turned the tables in each of these instances on the heavy-handed authoritarian power plays of hate by the Republicans. Miller and McMorrow did it, raised, you know, $2 or $3 million that went directly into the legislative campaigns in Michigan and helped flip the Republican majorities toward the Democrats. A pro-democracy coalition of Republicans and disaffected Democrats delivered those victories in Michigan. We're seeing that same kind of vibe happening in Tennessee when you see the result, the public backlash from so many prominent leaders across Tennessee, business leaders, not Republican politicians so much because they're all chicken shits, as I've said many times, but people who represent the center right in the historic Republican coalition are speaking out against it. And we're going to see the same thing in Montana, that people, there is a sizable majority of people in this country and in these states that will not tolerate this kind of behavior. And when Republicans insist upon flexing their minority positions when it comes to fair, value-centered issues, as we talked about to open this podcast with regard to the Biden campaign, it galvanizes the pro-democracy, pro-right versus wrong supermajority that exists in this country, and I think will lead to a pro-democracy, pro-values coalition victory in elections this year in states like Kentucky, Louisiana, and watch the governor's race in Mississippi, and next year in 2024 in the presidential race and races down ballot in several critical states.
You know, Jeff, and I would link this behavior to what DeSantis is doing to Disney down in Florida, right? That Disney had the audacity to push back against his anti-LGBT rhetoric and legislation. And so what does he do? You know, doesn't say, well, they're wrong or we disagree or whatever. No, he sets out to punish the Walt Disney Company, one of the biggest employers in Florida, by, you know, taking away the various special statuses that they have had over the years there. And it's a continuing feud now, more than a feud. Disney this week filed a lawsuit claiming that we are being retaliated against by the governor and the legislature in violation of our constitutional rights. And so Disney, to its credit, I don't think it's backing away from this fight. And DeSantis comes across as the authoritarian bully that he's trying to be, much like these legislators now being ousted. He's saying, either agree with me or I'm going to punish you. So I think this strain of, you know, this treatment of people, treatment of organizations is, you know, again, it's more than just ousting these legislators. I think it's an outgrowth of these other kinds of actions we've seen by people like DeSantis.
Yeah. And let's not forget that there were several Republican legislators in Michigan, the young Bill Schuette, Brian Postumus, Lana Tice, the aforementioned Lana Tice, others who, when Ron DeSantis was here in Midland, Michigan, a couple of weeks ago, endorsed his potential run for the presidency and were on social media and elsewhere nattering about, you know, the free state of Florida. Let's keep in mind what the free state of Florida really looks like. You know, I wonder if Dow, based up in Midland, would appreciate the Disney treatment coming from a Ron DeSantis type governor in Michigan. I wonder if Bill Schuette would be having the same, you know, conversations with the folks at Dow.
Right, right. So we do need, as you pointed out, business pushback that we saw in Tennessee. There's been a little bit of that in Indiana from the reports I've seen over the last couple of years. But we really do need those more moderate elements, particularly the business community that still associates itself with the Republican Party, to speak up. Perhaps that's a voice that they will listen to, even though, again, I think they got to be really worried when they see the Disney example. If Disney's going to get punished this way, how can any other business stand up to a bully like DeSantis?
Well, with that, if the Republic is still standing, Mark, and, you know, we've talked about a lot of dark things here, so it's always in question. If it is still standing, we'll be back next week. I'll be back with our producer and sometimes guest host, Walt Sorg, while you are off enjoying some well-deserved R&R.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jeff. Good luck next week while I'm gone. I'm sure it will be great. And I hope Rupert Murdoch doesn't fire you while I'm gone.
A Republic If You Can Keep It with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.